Let's go to hour number three. This talk show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Hour number three includes a conversation with Howard Beck. A couple of tweets off the top. Rebel tweets, Terrence and Sierra Madre does not need a title to claim his greatness. Dude was an original. True. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that back in the day, he might have been considered the best to ever do it without even winning one. Stucknut tweets, Terrence is the Dan Marino of the jungle. Right. Except Terrence never ripped a newspaper from a poor old lady. Mitzi is in Maine.
It was 7 o'clock in the morning, and I put 75 cents into the newspaper stand at the Miami Children's Hospital to get out a newspaper. So as I'm pulling out the paper, a hand reaches across from the opposite side of me and takes a newspaper without paying for it. So I look up to see what fool was doing that, and I looked into the big blue eyes of Dan Marino. And I said, oh, hi, Mr. Marino. Can I pay for the newspaper for you?
Straight fire. Damn, Mitzi. Just airing the Hall of Famer out on a nationally syndicated radio show. Wow, my man. Dan, is that true? You ripped a 75-cent newspaper from a children's hospital? Man, I hope that's not true. But did she sound like somebody who would make that up? What are you going to tell me next? That Don Shula did the same thing? Wow, Mitzi. All right, so this is kind of a weird thing, but I do want to remind everybody, and maybe I'm guilty of this myself. I am into hour number three before I get here. But let me remind everybody, it is game six of the NBA Finals tonight. Now, I know that reading between the lines and trying to decode KD's Instagram page is pretty cool. I understand that speculating about Kawhi's future is, well, hell, I don't know what that is because nobody can speculate on what Kawhi might do. I know this much. Here is the present. This is the now. The now is we're a few hours away from Golden State's final home game in Oakland ever. Win or lose, Oracle's wrapping up tonight. You know, Roracle, the home of We Believe, and where Chris Gatling could never be boxed out. Spree. Man, Spree. Those were the days, man, when Spree was killing it. Spree, Run TMC, Earl Boykins, Tommy Tolbert. Man, good days. It's closing down after tonight, regardless of the result. And speaking of the result, yeah, this could be kind of a meaningful night, right? As much as the insane ending of Game 5 was overshadowed by the Kevin Durant injury, Game 6 is being overshadowed by pretty much everything. Like, what's on the line? What are the stakes? Yeah, not that much, right? Just the possibility of the Raptors winning their first ever NBA title. Just Kawhi Leonard cementing his place among the all-time elite. Just the end of the Warriors. Look at a three-peat. Just another epic performance in a run of epic performances from the Warriors. Just the Warriors sending out Oracle in style. Just the Warriors doing what the Warriors do. Battle their asses off when they're in danger. Just the Warriors breaking out KD tribute towels and showing their love for him. Just the Warriors sending that series back to Toronto for an epic Game 7. Like I said, not much on the line. This is Oracle's last stand. It might be Golden State's last stand. This could be the end of the dynasty. Things do have a way of changing in milliseconds. And you only need to look back at Game 5 to remember that. But Game 6 is huge. Game 6 is a monster. There's no way Golden State goes 0 for 3 at home in the NBA Finals, right? Except that the Raptors are already 3-0 at Oracle this year. So, you know, Toronto's going to go into that building with a lot of confidence. And they're going to go in there knowing that there will not be Kevin Durant. And they know how to beat the Warriors without Kevin Durant. Fact is, Toronto has been the better team in the series when Kevin Durant does not play. Golden State, though, as great as they were, as great as that win was on Monday night, they were rattled afterwards. They were shaken to their core. They just watched their brother battle his way back onto the court, completely change the series in that first quarter, and then have his season end in the second. And yet they still found a way to get that done. They still found a way to win on the road, even though they were down six late. So to me, Golden State's got nothing left to prove. They've proven everything. You can't question their heart. You can't question their toughness. You can't question their will. And if you do, and you're still doing that after how they handled that devastation of losing Kevin Durant, then you're a moron. I mean, a legit idiot. You can't question Golden State's heart. They're busted up. They're banged up. They're worn down. They could have, and pretty much any other team would have, just folded up after seeing their guy go down the way he did. You know, like, great run, but we're done. But they didn't do that. DeMarcus Cousins came off the bench. He was a force. Klay and Steph had monster threes. Draymond had that huge block on the final shot. So never mind the focus on Nick Nurse's timeout in the fourth quarter. Toronto didn't lose that game. Golden State won that game. But can they do it again? It's a really big ask. Can DeMarcus Cousins give them another epic performance tonight? The thing about Cousins, as good as he was, as big as he was, and they don't win that game without him, coming off that injury, both those injuries, you really don't know what you're going to get from him night to night. But they need him to play big again. They need points from somewhere else other than Steph and Klay. Speaking of Steph and Klay, can they get loose yet again? Can they go for something near 50% from deep again? Does Game 6 Klay show up in Game 6? Can the Warriors, as a team, hit 48% from deep while holding the Raptors to 25%? Or is Pascal Siakam going to find himself again? You know Kawhi is going to show up. He always does. Kawhi can take over in a moment's notice. But is there going to be a running mate for him tonight? Does FVV find that shard of his tooth on the floor, reattach it, and go to battle? Or does Golden State win this somehow and send it back to Toronto, where the Raptors will have a nation behind them, but a world of pressure on their shoulders? It's big, man. Game 6 of the NBA Finals is tonight. It could not be any bigger. Can't wait for it. What's going to happen? Who do you like? One game at a time, but could Golden State win twice, given what they're dealing with? Could Adam Hawk do his job and pick up the phones? Yeah, I'm talking to you, Hawk. I don't know, dude. Like, I got to multitask around here. Things aren't the same since everybody started to quit. Yeah, I know. I know. You're fine, man. You're fine. You got an old guy behind you. You got dude next to you. And an empty chair.
Dude.
Don't worry. The guy with the big head will be in tomorrow to pick you up. 1-800-636-8686. It is toll free. Let's go to Los Angeles. Manny in L.A. Hey, Manny, how are you?
Hey, Jimmy. Fine. How are you? I got so pumped listening to that interview with John Lynch. Man, I'm a 49ers fan, and I think they're going to do big things this year with everybody that they've got coming back and all that kind of thing. But just for a minute, I wanted to take you back to the day after the draft in 2017, when you said that the Bears got worked by John Lynch and by moving up, you know, to pick Mitchell Trubisky. I'd like to ask if you'd like to reset that take. Do you think the Bears got worked on that day, Jimmy?
You know, it's a really good question, but I've got a better one. How do I feel about you calling the show, Manny, and me jumping you to the front of the line to make that point? Not real good. Trubisky looks like the real deal. I will say that. He looks like the real deal. I think that was a good pick. Do I want to take that back? I don't take anything back. It's part of my job, Manny, to put myself out there and to respond accordingly. What would you like me to do, Manny? Would you like me to lay out and say, hey, you know what? There was a draft that just took place, and really, none of us know what's going to happen, so tune in 5 years from now, Manny, and then I'll tell you what I think about this draft. But right now, I really can't give you any snap judgments. No, I'd rather not take that back. I would like to take back the idea I had of going to you and taking that telephone call, though. 1-800-636-8686. It is toll-free. But to echo your first point about the 49ers, you should feel good about them. They had a tough year last year. Things did not go well. Lots of injuries, just 4 wins. They've had a productive offseason. I like the moves that John Lynch has made. They're getting healthy. They feel like Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be better, even though he missed time. I am pretty high on them. Uriah Faber is my guest on episode 85 of the Jim Rohn podcast. I will reset that before the end of the hour. I've got Howard Beck coming up in a few moments. Let me quickly go to St. Louis. This guy's been waiting patiently. Mike in St. Louis. Mike, what's going on? How you living?
Hi, Jim. I'm living really good today. How are you?
I feel great. I'm living great, too. What are things like there after last night?
Everybody is losing their blipping minds. Everybody's just freaking out on what's going on. You know, Bobby Plager, you know, I'm thinking about him, you know, and all the great players that's been here and has not got to hoist the cup, and all the players that's, you know, gone off the earth, like, you know, Pavel Dimitra, you know, those players. I'm thinking about a lot of things as a St. Louis Blue fan today. Ask me anything.
All right. How's it feel to get run?
You don't like that cup.
I don't like that cup.
Ask me anything. I don't know. How does it feel to know that Alvin DeLauro just rung you up? You know what? I want to go back to the other call for a minute. Manny, I'll be fair. You know, I'm all about accountability. I'm all about responsibility. I'm all about ownership. So you said to me, hey, Jim, you said after that draft that the Bears got worked by John Lynch and took Trubisky. Would I like to take that back? How do I feel about that right now? You know, I've thought about this for a minute. And I want to say this. They did get worked. But by the Chiefs. They took Trubisky instead of Patrick Mahomes. How's that feel, Manny? How's that work for you, Manny?
Tell me how my ass tastes.
You did get worked. By John Lynch then, but ultimately by the Chiefs. Or would you rather have Trubisky than Mahomes, Manny? Tell me that. When we come back, I like St. Louis Blues fans saying, hey, man, ask me anything. Ask me anything at all. Well, why? I don't want to ask you anything. I already did. I asked you how you were. I asked you how you were living. What else do you want me to ask you? I'm not going to say that I don't care about you, but I'm not here to ask you questions, all right? If I have a guest, I'll interview the guest, and I'll ask that guest a question. Ask me anything. Hold up, Alvin. Ask me anything. Oh, I got Mike in St. Louis. Mike, I've been waiting for you to call. I've got a lot of questions to ask you, Mike. Lots of things I've been wondering about you, Mike. Mike, I have no idea who you are. What do you want me to ask you other than how are you? How are you living? In fact, I asked you two things. How are you living and what's it like in St. Louis? It's great. It's awesome. We won. I'm thinking about people who left the earth too soon. Ask me anything. All right. How's this grab you? Tell me how my ass tastes.
Tell me how my ass tastes.
No, I would never ask you that. That's definitely a Shaq question. All right, Alvin, go ahead and do what you do. That was a great call segment, wasn't it? Back to back. Stay strong, Hawk. Are you taking good care of your car? Show your car some love at O'Reilly Auto Parts, where you'll get better parts and better prices every single day. They've got the parts you need to get the job done right, from measuring tools, mechanic wire and motor oil, to cylinders, starters, and springs, from batteries, belts, and brakes, to filters, fluids, and fuses. O'Reilly Auto Parts has it all. O'Reilly stores are stocked with high-quality parts and accessories at guaranteed low prices. It's one-stop shopping for all of your vehicle needs. If you need something, the store's well-trained pros are standing by to help. If you do not have time to get to a store, shop O'Reilly online. You can have your stuff ordered and shipped to your home or to a store. If you want to buy even more, become an O'Reilly Rewards loyalty member and you will earn points every single time you shop. Reach 150 points, earn a $5 reward. Keep going and earn double points, bonus points, mega points. And you can get exclusive email-only offers. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day with O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to the Jim Rohn Show.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. For all of your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Back at it. Enormous Game 6. I mean, like, they're all big, but an enormous Game 6 tonight. We are joined by a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report, host of the Full 48 podcast. You know he's the friend of the program. He is Howard Beck. I'm going back there. Howard, what's going on? How are you?
Doing great, Jim. You?
Good, good. Howard, you have covered this game for a long, long time. Have you ever seen, however, an NBA Finals like this one?
Nothing that is even close. This is 22 years on the league for me, and I think it's either 18 or 19 finals that I've covered. And even at the start of this, Jim, like 17 different weird things ago, twists and turns, even at the start, I said this was going to be like nothing we'd seen because we've never had an NBA Finals open with a player of Kevin Durant's caliber, not just out, but out and looming as a possible threat to return to change the entire tenor of the series at any given time. And so we had that, just that hanging over those first several games. Is he coming back? Is he not? Is it game three? Is it game four? And, you know, sure enough, this thing's been all over the place since then. And we've had other injuries. Klay Thompson misses a game. Kevin, you know, Kevon Looney has his stuff. And then, you know, for Durant to go out the way he did, as awful as that was, and yet that game, from a basketball standpoint, was as tense and thrilling as you could hope a finals game would be, and all the way down to the final seconds, and with seemingly just Draymond Green's fingernail potentially preventing the Raptors from clinching a championship on the last play. Every piece of this, I feel, is just an unprecedented version of the NBA Finals. It's been fascinating and obviously at times awful because of what happened to KD.
Right. Howard Beck joining us right now. So in terms of what happened to KD, when he comes back, Howard, you see what he's doing, and he's playing really, really well. And in the back of your mind, you got to be thinking, damn, this is what this entire series could have been had he been on the floor. But then he goes down. What went through you when you saw him go down the way he did?
I gasped. I mean, I think everybody sitting around me in the press section and a lot of fans too just gasped because, you know, you don't know what – you're just far enough from the action. It's not the same as TV, and I want to, like, just spell this out to people. You're watching at home. You've got your nice close-up tight view on your 100-inch, you know, flat screen, and you're seeing vivid details. You know immediately that something looks wrong. For us, watching it live and not looking at the monitor, the first thing you think is, well, he's down, but I'm not sure exactly why he's down. Did he slip? As Serge Ibaka said, maybe his shoe slipped off, he thought. And so it takes a second, but your first thought is, I hope this isn't what I think it might be. Because you know coming back from the calf that the Achilles was one of those things that seemed to be looming in the background. And it took a few seconds at least to kind of catch up to, you know, for your thought process to catch up to, wait, is that what I think it is? Look down at the monitor. Oh, no, he's holding the lower part of his leg. I mean, and at that point, your heart just sinks. It's the, you know, it was the worst case scenario, and it was exactly what, you know, everybody feared as they were contemplating having him return in the first place, and why the Warriors up until that point had been very cautious. And, you know, we can debate up and down forever the decision-making and how they got to that conclusion, but obviously, everybody decided it was okay, and he looked great. He looked great when he was dancing in the hallway. He looked great in those first 11 minutes of play. He looked spry. He looked like his old self, and you know it's just such a tough thing all the way around.
We're talking to Howard Beck. One more thing about that: you spoke to Sean Livingston in the aftermath of the injury. Sean Livingston, of course, is somebody who's gone to hell and back when it comes to injuries. What did he have to tell you about that?
He was very impassioned, and this was on his way out of the arena that night. I caught up with him, and you know Sean, one of the all-time good guys of this league.
Definitely.
And a really smart guy, very thoughtful. And Sean has seen it all because he's experienced it all because his career was very much in doubt after he blew out his knee a few years into the league. So he's very sensitive to these subjects, and he was, you know, unsolicited. I mean, I asked him a very broad question, one of these kind of meandering kind of, Sean, how do you guys as players balance the competitive instincts with protecting your health and whatever? And he immediately went to, listen, Bob Myers and Steve Kerr and this organization would never knowingly put Kevin Durant or any of us in a position to hurt ourselves. Like, he immediately went to this just people need to know. These guys, this organization, these people care about us. And he was just very sensitive to the idea that people were going to frame this in a certain way. But he was also concerned about everything that preceded that. Some of the discussion, whether it was in regular media, social media fans, pundits, whoever, questioning Kevin Durant's resolve or his commitments and all this, because it created, as Sean said, a certain kind of perceived pressure to return. And I said, do you think that that's why he came back? Do you think he was feeling the pressure? And then on that one, he kind of demurred, said, you know, you'll have to ask, you know, Kevin that. I don't know. But he clearly, Sean had that concern that the discussion around Kevin Durant before that day might have fed into him deciding to come back prematurely.
I was going to say, Howard, where did he come out on that? For instance, I've said that, yeah, he may have felt pressure to come back, but I don't think it was from the organization. I think it was from pretty much everywhere else. Do you think, because we know that Kevin Durant sees that, we know that he reads it, and we even know that he reacts to it sometimes. Do you think that in any way influenced his decision?
Impossible to know, and I don't want to try to mind read, but you're right to point out that this is a guy who, as we know, is more sensitive than most athletes of his stature in terms of being very attentive to and cognizant of the discussions around him. I mean, he goes back at Chris Broussard on social media. He goes back at random fans on social media. For better or worse, he is sensitive to these things. He hears it. He reacts to it. Did that influence his decision to play that night? I mean, we'll never know, or we'll know maybe someday when Durant is back in the public eye and ready to speak on everything that's happened. But I don't know what role that played, or if that was just his own competitive instincts driving him back as soon as he could, and, you know, the medical folks saying, listen, we think you're okay.
I agree with you. I think that's fair. Howard Beck joining us. All right, so what about Toronto? Where does that leave them? They're on the road, but it's a place where they've had a lot of success. They know that Kevin Durant's not going to be there. How do you think Toronto shows up?
This part's fascinating, Romy, because what we've seen in this finals and also in this postseason in general was them kind of shedding all of the baggage of prior Raptors flameouts. And it makes sense. This is not the same Raptors team at all. I mean, Kyle Lowry's really the only holdover in the starting lineup from those, you know, prior postseasons that everybody always held up. But still, no matter what the composition of the team is, you know that you just let a chance to clinch this thing at home get away from you, blowing whatever the 6-point lead in the final, however many minutes that was. It's all a blur to me now. And, you know, do you carry that forward, or do you just shake that off and say, okay, we'll close it out at Oracle, where we've won a couple times in this series already. But still, this is the last game in Oracle Arena history. Combine that with the Warriors having saved themselves, you know, from elimination for another day. Combine that with the emotions about Durant, everything else, it's going to be as charged up as we've ever seen a game in the finals at Oracle tonight. And how does that impact the Raptors? And is there a seed of doubt in the back of their mind now? We'll see. But the Warriors are going to be really tough to close out. And the thing, too, that's changed in the last week is this. All right, Durant is gone. They will not have even the 11-point surge that he gave them the other night. And that was really important for them. And that's a big reason why they won the game, I think. But Klay Thompson missed a game last week. He missed game 3. And so he had to get his way back, into rhythm in game 4. And by that time, Steph Curry was gassed from game 3. Well, this time those guys are both in sync, as healthy as they're going to be. The Warriors are not thinking about Durant anymore. And, I think we'll see a better version of the Warriors tonight than we saw in games 3 and 4 at Oracle. Is that enough to beat Toronto? I don't know, because the Raptors are still, they've got, I think, the overall talent and depth advantage.
So final thought, I think, to answer your question, rhetorically or not, I think it's not enough. I think that you know what you're going to get from the Splash Brothers. I think you need something else. So where's it going to come from? Is it going to come from DeMarcus Cousins? Is it going to come from Quinn Cook? Is it going to come from somebody else? Do they need something beyond what they're getting?
Probably. Unless they're going to play a better brand of defense, which we've seen in flashes. And the Cousins thing is really interesting because DeMarcus Cousins was an outright disaster in game 4. I thought, my God, we should never see him get on the court again in this series. And I don't know if he was going to if Durant didn't go down the other night. I think, you know, I think it was pretty clear that they were going to keep him out of the rotation until they were forced to put him back out there. And then he played pretty well. He's very vulnerable defensively. He's got no ability to stop anyone or to stay in front of anyone. But he's definitely an offensive option and a release valve for the Splash Brothers. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's still the most likely candidate. I don't think you're going to say, well, we just need a big Quinn Cook game or an Alphonso McKinney game. Do you get one more throwback game from Sean Livingston or Andre Iguodala? Maybe. But, yeah, you're right. They're limited in what they can do offensively. But we also know that backcourt can fill it up, and those guys could carry you alone and just play enough defense to slip by. I mean, there's a formula there somewhere.
We are a few hours off now. He's a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report, host of the Full 48 podcast, and somebody who comes on the show quite a bit, always kills it. Howard Beck, my guest. Howard, thank you so much. Have a great night. Be looking for you.
Thanks, Roma. You too. Take care.
Good job, Howard. Howard Beck, I think somebody other than the Splash Bros has to step up. And DeMarcus Cousins, I think he was better than good in that last game. I think he kept that team together. There's no way they win that game without his contributions. But can he do it again? And he is a defensive liability right now. He's banged up. He's coming back from two major injuries. But they don't win that game without him. They need a big game, I think, from Cook or McKinney. Iggy, if he can do it. Sean Livingston. Somebody's got to step up. And somebody can. When we return, I got to talk about my guy, the California kid, Uriah Faber, for the Jim Rome podcast. It's Ritt! Garrett Ritt informed me. Bob Costas is our guest next week. Bob Costas came on the first episode of the Jim Rome podcast. Remember, Ep 1 was Aaron Rodgers and Bob Costas. So, Bob Costas makes his triumphant return next week for the podcast. It's Ritt! Good job, Ike.
It's lit!
But before I do that, I've got to reset Ep 85, starring Uriah Faber, and I will do that next. Always cracks me up to check out the bump in of the tweets on CBS Sports Network where they pull their own tweets. Ones that we've missed. I'm looking at them right now on the monitor. Good stuff. Welcome back. Welcome back. Last chance to get through. 1-800-636-8686. You know, obviously, when I say to you, call the program, I've done my best to screen out dopes, but people get loose now. It's possible to get through Hawk to get on the air. It does happen. We had that guy in St. Louis who said to me, ask me anything. Ask me anything. We had that guy quote Manny. Manny's this dope who's been calling the show since that 2017 draft. And he keeps changing his name and he keeps trying to make that point. Hey, Rome. Hey, Rome. Hey, Rome. You want that back? You want that back? You want that back when you said that John Lynch worked the Bears? My man. And I know you've been trying to call. And by the way, he's already gotten through with that. And we addressed it before. But he keeps changing his name and his city. He waits for me to change producers so he can get through and make that point. My man, you've got this all twisted. Why are you so caught up in how I criticized your draft? You should be a lot more into the fact that your team had a chance to draft a once-in-a-generational talent and didn't. You're so focused on, yeah, man, remember what Rome said after we made that pick and we made that deal? You got this twisted, Manny. Bitter enough, Manny? Focused on the wrong thing, bro. The thing being, you've got Trubisky when you could have had Mahomes. I'd focus on that. That's where your ire should be. But don't worry, Hawk will last maybe another year here, and then somebody else will come through and screen the calls, and you'll have a chance to kind of get over on him too. And then my take will be the same. You're focused on the wrong thing, dude. The thing being, you could have had a once-in-a-generational player, but you didn't, and you don't. So my point is, call. Anybody can get through. Now, a couple of days back, I dropped the 85th edition of the Jim Rome podcast. This week's episode is the pride of Isla Vista and Sactown, both. He can claim both as his towns. And even though he just turned 40, he still is and always will be the California Kid. I'm talking, of course, about Hall of Famer Uriah Faber. Now, he was one of the guys who put the lighter weight divisions on the map years ago. Back in 2016, he retired after he beat Brad Pickett in Sacramento. It was a great way to walk off in his hometown, won the fight, called it a day. Great story. But nearly 3 years later, as a 40-year-old again, who just became a dad for the first time, Uriah is putting the gloves back on. He's heading back to the cage for a hometown fight next month against Ricky Simone.
Every time I go in there, it's to prove that I'm the best. And so it is a one-off opportunity, but it's not necessarily a one-off journey. So I decided, and I've been thinking about this for a while, I always stayed within the USADA drug pooling just to make sure that I had the ability to jump at the drop of a hat if I needed to. But this is something that I knew was coming. I wanted to get some things out of the way, you know, the baby, of course, and getting myself established outside before I had done anything. But I needed that little edge to push me over. And I think the birthday, a fight in my hometown, the current lay of the land at the weight class, and the new opportunities that are coming into our sport with the ESPN partnerships. And it's just an exciting time to be involved. And if you wait too long, there's no coming out of retirement. Now's the time, and otherwise the boat's going to pass you.
So you wonder why that guy's had so much success inside and outside the octagon. Listen to him. And you heard him say it. Now is the time. He responds to that question. I said to him, is it a one-off? He said, it's a one-off in terms of the fight, but not in terms of the journey necessarily. So that comeback fight is against Ricky Simone. It goes down exactly 1 month from today, July 13th in Sacramento. Make sure you look for that. You also heard Uriah say that even though he's been retired, he's always stayed within the USADA testing program just in case he ever wanted to come back the way he is right now. And on top of that, he had some pretty choice comments, and he's pretty upfront with his disdain for drug cheats. He's got no time for it or for them.
It makes me sick to my stomach that I think about these guys that are cheating the system. And I've had friends that have done it and gotten caught, and no one would ever tell me about it when they're doing it, because they understand about my upbringing, my moral code, and everything that goes along with it. When you're cheating like that, first, one thing needs to happen. You have to make a decision that you're going to cheat everyone else you're going against. Two, you have to have an internal belief, or at least an inkling, that you don't have enough as a human being, that you need more. And then you have to be willing to just say, okay, I'm going to lie to everyone. I'm going to cheat the people I'm going against. I could possibly be putting people in physical harm. And on top of that, just stealing. You know, you're stealing other people's opportunities.
This is why people love the California Kid. Damn good fighter, exciting fighter, real dude. Speaking of immensely popular fighters who we have not seen in a minute, I want to get to his thoughts on Conor McGregor and where he's at. And if Uriah thinks that Conor still has the motivation to get back in the cage and to get back and pay the price and to train and grind after stacking cash with the Floyd fight, after getting soundly beaten by Khabib last October, after making all that money on his liquor, does he still have that edge? Uriah says he does.
What I know of Conor, he's actually a really grounded person. I've got a lot of respect for him, the way his commitment to his family and his friends and his country. And I always mess with him saying he was leaving Ireland and, you know, tested that a little bit. But the reason why people are fighters, and you could talk about Mike Tyson or Roy Jones Jr. or some of the greats throughout time, is not because of the money. You don't spend massive amounts of your time and energy as a young kid or an up-and-comer barely eating quality food and having to bunk up for rent and all this other stuff because this big dream of money. I mean, it might be part of the equation. Some people are motivated by different things, but at the end of the day, there's still a part of Conor, I believe, that wants to prove that he's a bad mofo. And I think you mess with that a little bit, that's where you get the best Conor.
Uriah. Remember, Dana White told TMZ that Conor will fight in 2019, so we'll see. Uriah definitely thinks that Conor is still really motivated, still has that edge, will still grind. Now, a fight that I know is not going to happen, but is getting a lot of run, is 25-year-old Justin Bieber against 56-year-old Tom Cruise. In case you missed it, earlier this week, the Biebs randomly tweeted out that he wanted to fight Mav. Jay Beebs, VMAV. Look, I've got no idea who's got the edge here, but Uriah Faber sure as hell does.
Justin Bieber was cage side when Dominic Cruz and I fought. I've also seen him work with Floyd a little bit, and he's got some decent little jabs and whatnot. People forget Cruz was an actual wrestler, meaning he competed probably for years. So Cruz seems like he might be in better mental and physical shape, in my opinion, but Bieber's got that unbelievable self-belief. I almost feel like it's a wrestler versus striker, and age and self-belief. Age on the side of Bieber, self-belief is about equal. It could be a dogfight, man. Whoever lands their big punch or gets their big takedown.
Find me a better breakdown of a hypothetical fight between a 25-year-old pop star and a 5'6" Hollywood legend twice that age. You can't. You just can't. Also, Uriah had some pretty interesting thoughts on the latest champ, Henry Cejudo. In fact, he made news with what he said about that, along with Dominic Cruz, Cody Garbrandt. Cejudo called out Faber after winning the bantamweight title as well as all those other guys on Saturday night. We got into it. Uriah had a thoughtful response, and while many were claiming or clowning the double champ for calling himself the greatest combat athlete of all time, Uriah was not offended by that. He had high praise for the Olympic gold medalist. So, a good conversation with the California Kid on Ep 85. Also, make sure you check out the podcast for an Isla Vista story that he told me that I cannot run back here on the radio program. But I can tell you this, it involves a 21st birthday, booze, white clothing, blood, and a shopping cart. Make sure you look for that. Ep 85 of the Jim Rohn podcast with Uriah Faber right now on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and JimRome.com. Ed Haunted 00 Horse tweets, "Hey Jim, don't ask me anything." Signed, Alonzo Mourning. At Belligerent Nuck, "If you're ever going to take a call from a guy named Manny again, his last name better be Cheeseburger."
In Anaheim. Manny, good to have you. What's up?
Hey, Jim. Manny Cheeseburger over here. How you doing today? Thanks for the vine.
You got it, Manny Cheeseburger.
Hey, Manny Cheeseburger. It's Jim Corndog. What's up, bro?
Not a very good call.
Manny, welcome to the club.
Yeah, it's Struvy406 tweets, "If the Raptors are going to win, it better be tonight so that bitch, Drake, can't celebrate on the home court." Rich in the 302 tweets, "Booking podcast guests makes Dasmati look like a scrub. Well done, Ike." War of the Raptors continuing the first-time champion trend. Rome, "I'm a donut guy." Signed, Stay-at-Home Dad's Paycheck.
Donuts. Train, planes, and automobiles. You better have my donuts.
Smack Off 25 presented by my pals at Vivid Seats. Remember, this year, Vivid Seats is giving every Smack Off caller that makes it to air on June 21st $50 towards the purchase of VividSeats.com or the Vivid Seats app. From the biggest concerts to the best games of the summer, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the Vivid Seats app or visit VividSeats.com. My thanks to John Lynch, who worked the Bears a couple of years back in the draft. Dylan Windler, NBA draft prospect. Howard Beck, big game 6 tonight. We will be all over that tomorrow. Thank you for listening. My thanks to the XR4TI. Have a great day. Check out the Uriah Faber podcast, Ep 85. It's a really good one. Look for that. 8 days until the Smack Off. It is a week from tomorrow. We're out. See ya.